and welcome to the IMI's Talking Points podcast. My name's James Skoltok, IMI Motor Pro Editor. In this episode, we're taking a look at allyship, a key tool in helping create inclusive and successful working environments. To explain what allyship is and how it can work in any business is Jeffrey Parsons from The Inclusion Imperative. Hello to you, Jeffrey.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Before we delve into the topic of allyship, which we're going to discuss, I thought it'd be good to give a little bit of background to yourself and The Inclusion Imperative, which is the company that you founded.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. I founded the Inclusion Imperative a couple of years ago. It's nearly 2 years ago now. On the back of just having retired, which I always find a bit of a scary word, retired from my career in the world of financial services, which I was in for 35 years, actually, always in front office positions, finishing up as a managing director on the trading floor for the last few years, really working on things that bankers work on, products and servicing clients and developing all sorts of exciting things. But on a side of desk basis for about the last 10 or 12 years of that, I was extremely active around diversity and inclusion, although we didn't really have that terminology all that time ago. And I actually, was, very, very active and very, actually quite successful in making changes in that regard, both within the organization that I work for and more broadly. And it occurred to me that actually that's what I really love doing. And so when it came for time to me to move on, it was a natural thing for me to start the Inclusion Imperative. And now I work with organizations of all shapes and sizes to help them progress on their inclusion journeys internally and externally.
Okay, so in terms of the type of work that you do then in the Inclusion Imperative with clients, what sort of things do you look at? How do you work with businesses then?
Well, it's a whole range of things, actually. It could be something as simple as say a keynote speech or just going in and having a lunch and learn or a panel discussion just to kind of warm people up on the subject of inclusion. But it also can manifest in things like, full-on workshops and training, some mentoring, coaching, and, diagnostic reviews of things like policies, practices, and how people work together and behave. Really all about trying to make organizations get the best out of their critical resource, which is actually their staff, by creating things like a psychologically safe environment and practicing inclusive leadership.
And I guess I can kind of transition now into the topic for today, which is allyship, which I guess is a key tool in companies just trying to foster a good working environment for everybody.
Absolutely. It's one of the most important tools. It's also a very, very powerful amplifier because, most of the individuals that we are talking about in this regard are minoritized, a bit like myself. I mean, full disclosure, I identify as a gay man, so I'm part of a minority. And for minorities to be heard, they need the support of people who identify with the majority so that, we actually do get the numbers swollen, not only just identify, but also just to support. In that way, it's a super important tool just in terms of volume and visibility and being heard. But it's a super important tool anyway. I mean, I mentioned earlier psychological safety, which is a critical ingredient for organizations to really empower their staff to bring their full value to bear at the workplace. And we always often think of psychological safety as really being something that leaders create. And in large part, that's true. But the very first stage of psychological safety is inclusion safety. It's really just the ability to feel connected and belonging. And everybody has a part to play in that in context of allyship. I mean, the antithesis of allyship is what's often called like micro-exclusions or microaggressions, which is a sort of behavior that just makes people feel very othered. They're just not part of the in crowd. That's never very helpful. It just basically means you want to go into your shell. Allyship is the opposite of that. Allyship is a way of helping other people bring other people into the conversation so that they can be of their best selves at the workplace.
So if you were explained to someone who wasn't aware of what allyship is, how would you explain it to them, what it was and why it's beneficial?
Well, allyship is, very simply, allyship is leveraging your own social capital for the benefit of somebody else. Mm. So, you know, just being who you are, what advantages do you have that you could, you know, you could basically activate for somebody else's benefit? It's what I call lending your privilege. And privilege, of course, is quite an emotive word. It doesn't mean, you know, you've got a Rolls Royce and a mansion. It basically means that, you know, you sometimes just don't have to think about things which are inherently in your favor. I mean, I'm sitting here as a white cisgender male, and all three of those characteristics come with a degree of privilege that if people don't have them, they don't have those natural advantages, say in the workplace, things I can take for granted that they wouldn't, because, you know, in many cases, apart from being a gay man, I identify as part of the majority. So it's very important for people to understand their degree of privilege and how they can lend it to other people. They can leverage their own social capital for the benefit of other people.
So how do, for example, how would someone leverage their position then in terms of becoming an ally, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to point out that there are no barriers to this. Anyone can be an ally, right? I mean, there's no qualification for being an ally. The only ingredients really for being an ally are that you believe that everyone should experience full equality, and that you are prepared to find ways and opportunities to help colleagues and coworkers and others feel included. And you know, so anyone can do this. And the ways that you can go about doing it are, you know, are multiple, actually, and they're not rocket science. I mean, as I mentioned, you know, lending a privilege, and that can manifest itself in a number of ways. You can either be very public about your allyship, and if I take the example of myself, for example, as somebody who is part of the LGBTQ plus community, for someone to be an ally to me very visibly, it could be something as optical and basic as, you know, attending a pride event or wearing a rainbow lanyard or celebrating some of the key dates in the calendar, like February, where at the moment is LGBT History Month, and doing something visible publicly like that is a good sign out of your outward allyship. But actually, you can do it quite personally as well on a quieter basis. And that's usually through the sort of language that you use and the conversations you have with an individual to let you know that you hear them, you empathize with them, you've got their back. So you can do it very, very, very obviously or very quietly. And you can also think about the ways that actually that manifests itself. So there are times when allyship means different things.
Yeah.
There are times when you need to be shoulder to shoulder with people. You need to listen to people's experiences, understand what it's like if you are, you know, a minoritized person in the workplace, for example. And that's just a sort of process of self-learning. And that is itself an act of allyship, which people appreciate. But there are times when you've actually got to be much more direct than that. You've got to get in front and behind, if you like, when I say that. So not just beside listening to people and you know, supporting them shoulder to shoulder. There are times when you've got to get in front of them and shield them from harm. A classic case is when you've got people using, say, racist or sexist or homophobic behavior in the workplace. It's appropriate for an ally to step in there and challenge that behavior and actually try to make the person who use that language or carried out that particular part of particular act, let them know the impact of what they're doing. Because quite often it's done, you know, out of what they think is jest or in banter, and they're just not understanding the impression of it. So sometimes you've got to be a shield, but other times you've got to be a support behind, not in front of, behind. And that's when you get behind the cause, advocate for LGBTQ plus people, for example, or Black people, or anyone who's minoritized, especially when they're not there to do it for themselves. You know, if you're in a meeting and that person's perspective is not being reflected and you know what it is, step up, speak up, have their back. You know, when they're not there for themselves, that's classic allyship.
Yeah. And I guess there will be people out there that really do want to be allies for friends, colleagues, etc. But it may seem a little bit scary almost, I guess. Especially when you're just talking about standing up for someone, if someone says something that's derogatory, for example, and you have to try and be proactive and speak up against that, that can be quite scary, can't it?
Absolutely.
Well, you have touched on this in slight ways, but are there different ways to be an ally, but you can still be part of the change in a working environment?
Absolutely. As I said, there is no kind of one size fits all with this, and it's very circumstantial, and it comes down to individual personalities as well. I mean, there's, I call it a spectrum of allyship. I mean, let's be honest, ally is a fairly wide ranging term. And if we just define it as something which is supportive, then, you know, for some people, that's all they do. And they consider themselves to be an ally. A lot of people have an issue with the fact that, you know, people give themselves the title ally when really it's not for them to decide. Yeah. But I do encourage people to start small. And, you know, and allyship is, I was reminding people, ally is a verb as well as a noun. And it's really about doing things. But before you get to that stage, what we really want is your support. Yeah. So your awareness and your support. And that means do things like, you know, educate yourself and be a sympathetic supporter, even if you're not actually doing anything which looks like outwardly supportive actions. You're not doing those, you know, stepping in front of or getting behind, but you might be trying to be beside somebody, kind of finding ways to learn a little bit more about it so that you're coming at it from an educated perspective when you are able to do something about it. So it's fine to start small on the spectrum and be what I call a supporter rather than necessarily an ally. And that's really somebody who's sympathetic to the cause but hasn't yet graduated to doing that much about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you can move on to being an ally. And being an ally then means that your allies are, say, action oriented, and it's much more about empathetic, being more empathetic than sympathetic, and eventually compassionate. So you become more of an advocate even than an ally and start doing things which are going to help people in
there. Yeah. Is there, because obviously, you know, the work that you do with clients with the Inclusion Imperative, there's a broad range of topics and processes, etc., that you cover. In terms of allyship, though, is there like might sound strange, but is there a process that businesses can sort of include in their day-to-day running to help grow allyship within themselves?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's on the businesses not to just leave this to the individuals. And that's the common, you know, common problem I see called out an awful lot is that a lot of people are eager to be allies. They actually want to help, but frankly, they don't know what to do. And that's because, you know, nobody's told them. There isn't a cheat sheet around this. I mean, I do have cheat sheets that I share with my clients and give them tips around practical things they can do. But quite often what happens in organizations is that this gets left to the individuals who are typically, say, minoritized, and they, you know, get themselves into, you know, a little network or an employee resource group, and they get busy doing stuff, which is terrific. But that is not enough if the organization itself doesn't overlay that with some sort of ownership and strategic behavior. So it's almost delegating the problem to individuals and saying, you go off and do it, but they're not giving it the sanction, the cloak of authenticity and respect and credibility that comes from the organization saying, this is important to us. And that's super, it's super critical. You know, no inclusion initiative will stick or will really, you know, have the impact that anyone would like if it doesn't have the strategic overlay as well as the tactical energy. So although it's great for people like me to go out and say, please be an ally to the LGBTQ+ community or people of color to say the same from an ethnicity perspective, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if that is just a couple of individuals looking like they're just banging the drum for their own little vested interest, it's never going to have a good impact because people don't see that it's got the business behind it. And there are business imperatives. The whole reason I call my organization the Inclusion Imperative is because there is a massive business imperative about being inclusive, and allyship is a great way of doing that.
Yeah. Also, I'm sure that listeners will think about it because the IMI's membership is so broad, everything from huge businesses right down to family run organizations that might only be less than a handful of people. But I guess with allyship, that is something that doesn't require huge amounts of investment, financial investment, or necessarily huge investments in time either. So it's applicable to no matter what your business size is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it takes one person to be an ally. So it's not like you need thousands of people. Allyship is an individual, personal activity. It's a commitment, an individual commitment to, as I say, basically make sure that you believe that equality should exist for everyone, and you'll do things to make sure it does. Yeah. And so that's very much a personal thing. And yes, it's really about just the day-to-day behaviors and attitudes and language, etc. So a lot of it is really just about committing to learning and committing to putting in practice what you have learnt, and that's just a daily routine. And yes, we'll make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. And in an environment where learning is seen to be conducive, sorry, learn mistakes are seen to be conducive to learning, as in you learn from your mistakes. Mistakes are not only inevitable, but they're almost encouraged. You know, I'm always worried when I go into workplaces where people don't say anything, and they're not saying anything, not because they don't feel that they need to, but because they're scared to say the wrong thing. Yeah. And a good ally should be prepared to make mistakes. And a good person who is on the other side, benefiting from that allyship, should work with them to make sure that they don't feel alienated or threatened or in any way uncomfortable about maybe using the wrong language. And it, you know, again, if I use the LGBTQ+ example, you know, that is a very dynamic space, and the terminology is changing a lot, quite a lot in the last few years. We cannot expect everybody to know that, especially if they're not part of the community. And if they get something wrong, allyship behavior is a two-way street. We have to help our allies get it right, but in a way which is constructive. And it's not about finger wagging and, you know, scoring points and you got that wrong, so you're a bad person. It's about, okay, you meant that with a good intent. That wasn't quite right, but let's correct it and commit to moving on and learning from that. So it's very much a two-way street. Allyship is, you know, something that we can help people with. And it doesn't require huge infrastructure. It doesn't require thousands of people. It just requires commitment from both parties to making sure that this happens every day.
Yeah. And I guess allyship is just one of the available approaches to creating a more inclusive society, but in our case, more specifically, automotive businesses and industry. How does it work in terms of using allyship along with other approaches to make environments easier and more inclusive?
Well, allyship is a sort of drumbeat that runs through all of it, because everything we do is reliant upon human behavior, right? So all initiatives about trying to create inclusion have to be enacted, at least now before AI takes over the world. They currently have to be enacted by people. And, you know, that means that people have, you know, we need to understand people's behavior and personalities and different the different way that people operate. We're not all automatons. Yeah. So it's about weaving into the way that we deal with people a sort of understanding that people are different, and what we should be doing is being empathetic in the way that we lead. So a big part of creating psychological safety is practicing empathetic leadership, which is really getting to know people as people rather than just as numbers. And that includes, you know, something that an ally would do, or even getting to know the sort of person who you think would be a good ally, just because they might be, you know, maybe a bit more extroverted, so that they're going to be more inclined to do things rather than, you know, shy and keeping to themselves. Yeah. So practicing empathetic leadership as part of the creation of psychological safety enables things like allyship to come to life. Allyship is critical. As I said, if you don't have allyship, if you've got the antithesis of allyship in the workplace, the very first stage of psychological safety, which is inclusion safety, is almost certainly not going to survive, because you won't feel like you can be yourself if you're always being othered, if you're always subject to microaggressions or micro exclusions. So allyship is an antidote to that, and it allows you to build the first layers of psychological safety, which then empathetic leadership can accelerate to become, you know, to fully active in the workplace.
And just to finish off then, and to put you on the spot just a little bit anyway, if you were in front of a business owner or employees from a business, what advice would you give them in and around allyship and how to get the process moving or started?
I would say, I have that question quite a lot, actually, when I go and talk. Well, give me some, you know, specifics, which I mentioned cheat sheets earlier, and I do actually have kind of just basic tools. And I've developed a mnemonic, actually, which is deliberately, the title of it makes sense, really, because I said ally is a verb as well as a noun, and it requires action. So the mnemonic I've put in place, created, if you like, is applied, because applied is application. It's something you do. So applied are seven letters, and there are seven types of things people can do. Briefly, they're amplify, protect, promote, learn, influence, empathize, and disrupt. And I usually just flesh that out. So for example, amplify, just, you know, visibly celebrate, you know, the minority that you're talking about here, you know, whether it's wearing a lanyard or getting involved in a network event or celebrating a key date or just talking about it in meetings. So that sort of thing. Learn, the L is for learn, you know, educate yourself, seek out training, Go and watch those TED Talks. Make sure you do understand what the appropriate language and behavior is. And things like disrupt, D is one of my favorite words because I kind of consider myself a bit of a disruptor. Be prepared to challenge the status quo and some of the systemic barriers that minoritized people face. You know, it's very easy for us to create recreate our teams in our own image, you know, have full-on affinity bias kicking in through unconscious bias, and suddenly we're all surrounded by people who look and sound very similar to us. Mm. And that's very easily done because we haven't been prepared to challenge the way things are always done and to break down the systemic barriers that are stopping people who look and think and feel slightly different, bringing it themselves into the conversation, or even necessary sometimes getting into that environment where they could do that. So yeah. Allyship can be all of those things. And I do have lots of little techniques and things that I work with my clients to help them put that into action daily.
Okay. Well, that was really, really interesting. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and your time as well. I hope listeners will take a lot away from this. But is there anything that I've missed or perhaps you think is important to add to the topic?
No, I think it's been a very good and a very fast but very comprehensive discussion. I would just say that this subject can seem daunting, but don't worry about it. I mean, say start small, you know, baby steps, it's fine. Just think about how you can start the process. Be a supporter, first of all, before you move to becoming an ally. You know, learn about these things and make sure you understand why it matters. And that's probably the most important thing. If you understand the why, you can deal with the how a little bit later.
Thanks to Jeffrey for joining me, and thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again on the next podcast.